Hello and welcome to this research seminar, which is organized by the Hellenic Observatory at the London School of Economics. My name is Philip Katsinas, and I'm a research officer here at the Hellenic Observatory. And we are here today to discuss the findings of the research project Youth and Politics in Protracted Conflicts, a comparative approach on hope for a settlement and return of internally displaced people. This research project was funded by the AG Leventis Research Innovation Program in Cyprus and conducted by the speakers today and a group of further researchers. More information on this specific research project is available on the project page on the LSE Hellenic Observatory website, where you can also find and download and hopefully read a report stemming from this project. The link to this project website will be displayed in the chat during the event. So today's presentations will be based on the project survey of Greek Cypriots and Turkish Cypriots inquiring into the wishes and expectations for the solution of the Cyprus problem by the youth in comparison to older people and the views of internally displaced people from both communities. Key findings indicate a majority among Greek Cypriots and Turkish Cypriots supporting a bizonal, bicommunal federation. More importantly, the speakers will explore whether a settlement that assures political equality for the Turkish Cypriots and security from Turkish influence for Greek Cypriots could be acceptable to both communities simultaneously, as well as how committed each community is to alternative options, such as, for example, a two-state solution and the unitary state. This will be put in a more comparative perspective by also discussing the situation in Israel-Palestine. So let me now briefly introduce the speakers in the order that they will be speaking to us. Our first speaker today is Haris Psaltis, who is an associate professor of social and developmental psychology at the University of Cyprus. He runs the Genetic Social Psychology Lab of the University of Cyprus and the University Center for Field Studies. He worked as a postdoctoral researcher at the Oxford Center for the Study of Intergroup Conflict at the Department of Experimental Psychology, University of Oxford. His work covers intergroup relations between Greek Cypriots and Turkish Cypriots in Cyprus, and specifically the development of prejudice in childhood and youth, history teaching and collective memory, intergroup contact, and prejudice reduction. He is currently the national coordinator of Cyprus for the 10th round of the European Social Survey. Our second speaker is Hussein Çakal, who is an assistant professor in social psychology at Kiel University, where he runs the intergroup relations and political psychology lab. His work has covered the dynamics of collective action and prejudice reduction strategies, effects of social identity and intergroup contact on health and intergroup emotions among advantaged and disadvantaged groups. He is the co-editor of Psychological Perspectives on Intra-Regional Migration and Intergroup Relations in Latin America, and the lead editor of Intergroup Relations in Turkey, which is a book in press with Routledge Publishing House. Our third speaker is Neofidos Loizidis, who is professor in international conflict analysis at the University of Kent and the director of the Conflict Analysis Research Center. His research focuses on political institution building within violently divided societies, power sharing, and other formal or informal mechanisms aiming to mitigate protracted disputes. Professor Loizidis is the author of The Politics of Majority Nationalism, published in 2015 by Stanford Press, and Designing Peace, published in 2016 by University of Pennsylvania Press, and Mediating Power Sharing, published in 2018 by Routledge. His research is currently funded by a US Institute of Peace grant entitled Citizen Preferences and the Design of Effective Peace Settlements. And our last speaker today is Oded Adomi Leshem, who is a fellow at the Truman Research Institute and the Psychology of Intergroup Conflict and Reconciliation Lab at the Hebrew University, Jerusalem. His research is located at the nexus of political psychology and conflict resolution, with a specialization in protracted ethno-national conflicts. He has published numerous articles and book chapters on the political psychology of hope and despair, and on how political power shapes people's interpretation of the concept of peace. I'm going to invite each of our speakers to talk for about 10 minutes today. And as the discussion proceeds, you, the audience, can share your events and can share your comments on the event via Twitter using the hashtag LSECyprus. If you have any questions to the speakers, and I really hope that you have many questions, please use the Q&A box, which should be at the bottom of your Zoom screen. You can type your question at any time, and I will do the best to pose as many of these as possible to our speakers. And for those of you who are watching the event live on Facebook, which will hopefully remain online today, please add your questions as comments under the live stream. Finally, we are recording today's event, and we hope to make it available in a few days' time. Of course, always subject to any technical difficulties. So without further ado, I would like to invite our first speaker, Haris Psaltis, to start his presentation.
Thank you very much, Philip, and thank you very much for the introduction and the invitation to present our work that was funded by the LSE Hellenic Observatory. So let me start my presentation. What we will be talking about today is that we will start with a short introduction of the current context in Cyprus and our methodology. Our study was a questionnaire survey, a telephone survey that was conducted in both communities. So we will briefly discuss the content of the questionnaire that we used and the methodology we followed. We will present our research questions and main findings. And then our colleagues, Neophytos Loizidis, will discuss the political implications of our findings. Hussein Chakal, with myself, will be presenting the main body of findings. And our colleague, Odette Lechem, will present part of the findings, comparing with similar findings from the Israeli-Palestinian context, especially as they relate to the issue of threat and political preference. So let me start by giving a short introduction to the topic of our discussion today. The vast majority of Greek Cypriot and Turkish Cypriot youth have grown up separately from each other, deprived of the right to learn about the life and aspirations of each other. The two separate educational systems have largely contributed to this. And there is recent research by Cihan Tsaroglu, which suggested that the youth in both communities is politically disempowered and not engaged in the ongoing efforts to resolve the Cyprus problem. Still, there is recent socio-psychological research, which also suggests that the opportunities for contact that were made possible after the opening of the checkpoints in 2003 can bring positive changes, which is prejudice reduction and trust building by intergroup contact between the two communities. And as we have seen only last year, there is a significant body of civil society from both communities which resisted the idea of closing the checkpoints due to the COVID crisis. And that's only one of the parts that we will be discussing today, which has to do with the role of contact in facilitating prejudice reduction and relating to the way refugees and internally displaced people might want to return to their properties or not. So these developments call for an understanding of the wishes and expectations of the people of Cyprus in both communities about the solution of the Cyprus problem, and especially the youth who are the future of Cyprus and the internally displaced people who are the victims for such a protracted period and importantly excluded from the formal negotiation process. Our two research questions. First, what are the hopes and expectations of the youth and IDPs, internally displaced people, about the Cyprus issue, and how do they compare to older people and non-IDPs? And second, how or why displaced persons themselves make the decision to resettle in their pre-conflict residences, especially the children and grandchildren of first-generation IDPs. As mentioned earlier, our methodology was a telephone survey. We had a sample randomly selected of 536 Greek Cypriots and 550 Turkish Cypriots who completed the questionnaire. The Greek Cypriots completed the questionnaire in July, August 2020, and the Turkish Cypriots completed the questionnaire in December and early January of 2021. That kind of sample gives us a margin of error of 4% with a confidence level of 95%. And the questionnaire was designed by our interdisciplinary team, our colleague Aaron Halpering at the Hebrew University with Odette Leshem, Hussein Chakal, Neophytos Loizidis, who are with us today. As we mentioned from the beginning, this was a project supported by the grant Youth and Politics in Protracted Conflicts, a comparative approach on hope for resettlement and return of IDPs, and was funded by the LSE Hellenic Observatory through an AG Levendis Research Innovation Program on Cyprus Core. This is the content of the questionnaire. The first part had questions about the political efficacy of the participants. For example, as citizens, there is always something we can do to change the political situation, whether people agree or disagree with this. There were questions about their general hope or insecurity. When I imagine the future of Cyprus, I feel either hopeful or hopeless, afraid or secure. There were specific questions about their wish for a solution and expectations for a solution. This is a significant distinction that my colleague Odette will have to say more at some point. Wish is a very specific form of investigating whether people want a solution or peace more generally. So expectation concerns more the more cognitive evaluation of the possibility of reaching a solution. And as you will see, that's an important distinction to make. The questions were, for example, achieving peace, as you define an understanding between the two communities, whether people wish for that peace or not, ending the Cyprus problem in a way that assures political equality for Turkish Cypriots and assures security for Greek Cypriots from Turkish influence, a mutually agreed upon accord that will result in a bizonal by communal federation. So these were the set of questions asked both in terms of wish and in terms of expectations. Then we had a set of questions whether people support peace building initiatives or not. We had a set of questions about whether they expect the stalemate or the antagonism, for example, in the Eastern Mediterranean over gas exploitation to escalate or not. Questions about the ethos of conflict, various demographics like age, gender, that allowed a lot of comparisons that we will see some of them later on. And then there was a specific set of questions for internally displaced people, whether they want to return, whether they think about the places they left behind, and their political stance on elections. So generally, what we have learned about the youth from this study is that the youth were less supportive of peace and peace-building activities compared to the ages 55 plus, older people. This is in the Greek Cypriot community. In the Greek Cypriot community, they were also less supportive of BBF, but importantly, they had lower adherence to a negative ethos of conflict and less negative feelings towards Turks from Turkey compared to the two other age groups, which is a hopeful sign for the future, as it suggests that the youth are slowly overcoming prejudice relating to the events of 1974. Now, in the Turkish Cypriot community, the youth, again, were less likely to wish for peace and support peace-building initiatives compared to the ages 55-plus. But at the same time, the positive side of the finding was that they also had a lower negative ethos of conflict compared to middle and age and older age group. And this could be partly attributed, as we will see later, to higher levels of contact with the Greek Cypriots. Now, this is a graph that gives the image of one of the main findings, both in terms of age comparisons and compared between the two groups, the two communities. So what you see here with the orange color is the responses of Turkish Cypriots, and with black color is the responses of Greek Cypriots. And we see that the vast majority in both communities, irrespective of age, think that there is something to be done to change the situation, but this is more likely the case to be in the Turkish Cypriot community than the Greek Cypriot community. Then this is has to do with interest specifically to attend meetings and discussions about the Cyprus problem. Here there is a very clear trend showing that the younger Greek Cypriots do not have the same interest as older Greek Cypriots to attend such discussions and meetings, and that generally the interest in discussing the Cyprus problem is lower in the Turkish Cypriot community compared to the Greek Cypriot community. This is a question that asked whether there is wish for to end the problem in a way that addresses the core needs of both communities. And this was a very encouraging finding in the sense that you can see a clear majority in both communities that supports and wishes for the end of the problem in a compromise spirit. This is also a more specific political question, whether they wish to see a kind of solution, a package solution that would secure Greek Cypriots from Turkish influence, but also give Turkish Cypriots political equality. And again, you see that there is a clear majority in both communities that wish for this to happen. This is about bicommunal federation. And we see again very clearly a clear acceptance of federation. And there is a slight age effect here because the older Greek Cypriots are clearly more in favor of bizonal bicommunal federation compared to the younger people. But this is not to say that the younger people do not wish to see federation happening, because as you see, even in the younger age, there is a clear majority who support the BBF. And this is about peace-building initiatives like confidence-building measures. Again, a very encouraging finding. We see that in both communities, there is a clear majority that supports this kind of measures. But again, you see that this is the case more in the older generation than the younger generation. This is at whether they would like to attend and join demonstration demanding peace, like the one we have seen in the beginning with the photo. And you see that again, especially in the older generation, there is a majority, not so much for the Turkish Cypriots in the Middle Ages and the younger generation, but still the overall findings veer towards the majority. So in terms of the internally displaced people, we have learned some important new findings. First is that INDPs think about return and wish for return more in the Greek Cypriot community compared to the Turkish Cypriot community. This is related to greater support for peace building initiatives and higher wish for peace and solution of the Cyprus problem. About 40% of IDPs wish to return under Greek Cypriot administration, but only about 15% will return under Turkish Cypriot administration. And in this latter group, these return intentions are significantly related to pro-BBF stance and wishing for a solution of the Cyprus problem. In the Turkish Cypriot community, there's a clear relationship between wish for return and positive quality of bicommunal relations, low ethos of conflict, low prejudice. And there is an important finding which concerns the increase in number of Turkish Cypriot IDPs who wish to return in their pre-1974 homes in the south of the dividing line in Cyprus. And this is around 11%. In some years ago, it used to be around 5%. There is also another noteworthy finding that about 45% of Turkish Cypriot IDPs would also like to return to their homes if there was some kind of arrangement where they would live under Turkish Cypriot administration. We also explored the reasons why people would not like to return to their homes. And we have seen a significant difference in the two communities. As you will see here in Greek Cypriots, the lack of an emotional bond is something that represents only a slight minority of people. You can see it here in the end of the list. Whereas in the Turkish Cypriot community, this is actually a third of the list. So there is this difference in emotional ties between the IDPs, and clearly there are much more Greek Cypriot IDPs who want to return compared to Turkish Cypriots. So now I pass the rest of the main findings to my colleague Hussein Çakal. Hussein, you need to open your microphone.
And thanks for reminding me, thank you. Okay, so thanks Harris for the detailed description of the background and the main findings. And going back to the distinction between achieving peace as people perceive it and their expectations, wishes and expectations, the difference. The first slide shows us although there seems to be some differences across the communities, I think the most important finding here to focus on is the clear majority for the achieving peace, wish for achieving peace as people understand and define it. Mind you, we are not giving or prescribing any particular definition of peace. This is entirely based on people's own understanding of peace. And we see a clear support or clear wish for a peace, achieving peace as people understand it across both communities. We can, of course, debate the particularities of this finding with respect to the differences, apparent differences across the communities, but I think it is the most important is the strong wish for achieving peace. Next. And when we open this piece a little bit, when we detail it a little bit, it is also important to note that the same distribution of these results remain as almost 65% of the Greek Cypriot respondents, they very much wish it with respect, and also among the Turkish Cypriots, around 41% second this wish or this expression of their wish for achieving peace in a way that it assures political equality for Turkish Cypriots and assures security for Greek Cypriots from any Turkish influence. Now, why to include these details? Now, later, both Harris and Neofitos will elaborate on these, but these, over the course of our research and over the course of the years that we've seen, these are the main issues across the divide. So for Turkish Cypriots, over and again, we see a renewed and a continuous, desire to assure for a solution that assures political equality, whereas this changes for a desire to assure or guarantee security for Greek Cypriots from any Turkish influence. So it is important to see this. Even if we open this up, we see a continuous expression of wish for achieving a more detailed peace as the details demonstrate. Next. Then when we zoom into people's wishes for a bizonal, bicommunal federation, to more or less, we see the same structure. Although there's a drop in terms of percentages among the Greek Cypriot community for a support, a wish for bizonal, bicommunal federation, and whereas the Turkish Cypriot community preserves the same, expression of wish for this kind of solution, the differences across people, across the percentages, if we look, divide the results into two, that those who express they have no such wish and those who express they have a strong wish to achieve this remain the same, that there is a greater percentage of people wishing for a bizonal, bicommunal federation among both communities. Next, please. Now, moving forward, then we have already, we discussed what people wish in terms of the Cyprus problem. And now the next three slides will show us whether they expect, whether they see this as possible, whether they expect something like this happening in the near future. Next. So let me remind you again, whereas when we ask people about their wishes, the majority of the people, irrespective of the differences across the communities, wish for one or another type of solution to the Cyprus problem. When we move over to expectations, we see a concentration at the opposite end of this spectrum, where 26 plus 24% of the Greek Cypriots see they have no expectation of this happening, as they understand and see of whatever they understand of the peace. And with regards to the Turkish Cypriot community, more or less when we group not likely and unlikely options, again we see that there is the same amount of concentration. So there's a big gap between wishing for peace and expecting it to be happen. There is a mismatch. Next. Again, the same options. We see the replication of the same concentration on the opposite end, showing that people, irrespective of their community, they don't expect this kind of solution in a way that assures political equality for Turkish Cypriots and assures security for Greek Cypriots. And remember that these are the two important issues for respective communities. They don't expect this. They don't see this happening in the near future. Next. Again, the same distribution, although this time there appears to be a more pronounced difference in terms of their expectations across the communities, that we see a gradual increase of among people in the Greek Cypriot community who do not expect a bizonal bicommunal federation. And whereas for the Turkish community, there is a big chunk of people who see this not happening in the near future. And the rest of the, which amounts to 36, almost 37%, and the rest of the community in between. So that's what the differences between, that's the altogether, these three slides in matching shows that there is a big gap between wishes for a solution to Cyprus problem and their expectations of this wish becoming true. Thank you.
Thank you, Hussein. And before we pass on to our colleague Neofitos, it's also important to situate the present findings in the, you know, in a diachronic.
Indeed.
In a diachronic kind of a perspective, because from previous research with our colleagues, we have seen that, you know, the views of people change through time. And it's important also to understand in that sense how the stance of people changes on by zonal by communal federation. So for example, and this is something that will be discussed much more by Neofitos later on, we have seen that in the last years after the Crans-Montana failure, we have seen Greek Cypriots growing in support, an increasing support of by zonal by communal federation in the Greek Cypriot community. So essentially, people here situate themselves on three options, whether they consider it like the ideal solution, that's the light green, the dark green, whether they consider it, they could accept it as a compromise solution, and that's the green here, or whether they reject it, which is the red color. And you see that if you add the ideal notion of the solution with the solution that I could accept, then we have a clear majority and an increasing trend towards acceptance of BBF in the last years in the Greek Cypriot community. And in the Turkish Cypriot community, despite a slight decrease of support of those who see it as the ideal, there is still a very clear majority. By adding, you know, the people who see it as ideal and the people who could accept it as a compromise solution, again, you have a percentage of around 70% that supports by zonal by communal federation. One of the issues that we explored in this and previous research was the role of contact, and we identified that the more people have contact after the opening of the crossings in 2003 in Cyprus, the more they support this compromise solution of federation. And this importantly, Hussein has some relevant findings about contact that also applies to people from Turkey who live in the north of Cyprus. Hussein, maybe you could add here.
Indeed, yes. Of course, irrespective of the political narratives and the ongoing discussions on both sides, we cannot undermine or ignore the fact that there is a perception of the Turkish people of Turkish origin, people from the mainland or the settlers, as the literature calls them, that these people are against any kind of solution and against any kind of willingness to live with Greek Cypriots. This is irrespective of the fact that these people are indeed an important stakeholder in the Cyprus equation, and we don't know much about it. So when we look at findings from a recently completed research that we conducted with one of my doctoral students, we looked at, okay, and these people, we know that intergroup contact has this positive effect on reducing prejudice and getting people to support any kind of solution more and more across both communities, Turkish Cypriots and Greek Cypriots. But we didn't know much. We didn't know much about what happened when people have, let's say, less do not have any opportunities for contact. Most of the Turkish people living in the north, they don't have any, let's say, opportunities to cross the borders, and their only contact with the Greek Cypriot community happens when Greek Cypriots cross to the north. In this respect, can we ask the question, okay, so if these people do not have contact with Greek Cypriots, then their they will remain steadfast in their opposition to solution, since they also have more to lose in quotation marks from any possible solution. But we'll look at what happens through indirect forms of contact. One of the indirect forms of contact is that when the positive effects of contact extends to a third group that is not involved in the situation, in this contact situation. So this is a process par excellence to investigate in this situation when Greeks, when Turkish settlers do not have much opportunities for contact with Greek Cypriots. So we'll look at how their relations, social contact with Turkish Cypriots influence their attitudes first towards Turkish Cypriots and then towards Greek Cypriots. Now, looking at the second part of the model from left to right, we can see that the more positive attitudes Turkish settlers have about Turkish Cypriots living in the north, there is a direct effect, positive effect of on their willingness to live with Greek Cypriots. So more positive contact between Turkish settlers and Turkish Cypriots translates into more willingness to live with Greek Cypriots. And there's also a positive effect flowing from attitudes towards Turkish Cypriots towards attitudes towards Greek Cypriots, which means that more positive attitudes they have about Turkish Cypriots, this influenced positively their attitudes towards Greek Cypriots. And these effects, these positive effects altogether, because more contact with Turkish Cypriots translates into more willingness to live with Greek Cypriots and more support for a peaceful solution to the Cyprus problem, is, increased to the extent that they see themselves, Turkish settlers, they see their reputation as high. They believe that there is an integral part of the Cyprus issue, there's an integral part of the Turkish Cypriot society, and so forth. To the extent that they see themselves not isolated, not discriminated, the effects of positive contact that they have with Turkish Cypriots translate into more willingness to live with Greek Cypriots and more willingness to support the Cyprus problem, which is an important finding, I think, that goes against the assumptions that these people do not support peace and they don't want anything to do with the Greek Cypriots. Next, thank you, Haris.
I think just to sum up what we have presented.
Sorry, Haris, we're losing you a bit. Probably the connection is not very good at the moment.
We have seen this big disjunction between wishes and expectations. And this a BBC poll in Northern Ireland a few weeks before the Good Friday Agreement showed that only 13% of the people in the province believe that the negotiations will reach an agreement by May. The poll was released on 4th of March, while the agreement was made on the 10th of April, 1998, about 2 months later. So you see a similar finding in another post-conflict setting. This also has its explanation in social psychology and communication studies. We talk about the spiral of silence, which is when the vast majority in both communities wishes for a solution. When we have a situation where they do not discuss their wish, but actually because of the dispirited context of disappointment, they refrain from expressing their wish, we end up with the situation where an in-group norm is formed, where people have the sense that, you know, nobody wants anything to happen, whereas actually this is very misleading, as we have seen. And importantly, the findings in the Turkish Cypriot community that were elected after the recent elections show that there is still a majority who supports bizonal bicommunal federation. And actually, when we try to inquire about the stance of voters who voted for Ersin Tada, for example, we have seen that half of them are supporters of bizonal bicommunal federation, which is still encouraging. And given the clear corresponding findings of a supportive majority from Greek Cypriots, the findings are indeed promising for the future of negotiations from the point of view of public opinion. Of course, if we ever get to have any negotiations, and that's an issue to be discussed further on, I guess. So this was all from me and Hussein, and now I pass on the floor to my colleague Nofitos Loizidis.
Thank you very much, and Hussein, for the introduction. I was given the Herculean task of interpreting the Greek Cypriot public opinion. I have only two slides, so it will be a very brief intervention. Why is it complex to explain the Greek Cypriots? Because on the one hand, our surveys show an increasing support for federalists among the Greek Cypriots. On the other hand, most of you might not believe these findings, and rightly so. We haven't seen a change in Greek Cypriot politics and actions on the Cyprus problem. In fact, we have seen moves towards maintaining the stalemate. There has been a decreasing level of stability in the region and more escalations in the Eastern Mediterranean, so the findings are counterintuitive from that point of view. And even in the latest election, we haven't seen a major transformation on the political landscape. So there are good reasons for many of you not to believe on the Greek Cypriot side of the data. My task today is to try to convince you otherwise. So why is Greek Cypriot public opinion changing, if it's changing? The first way to interpret this data is to take a cynical view. A Greek Cypriot public opinion realizing that the Cyprus problem would never be solved, the Cyprus issue becoming what Swedish diplomat Ingemar Lidl has described as a diplomat's graveyard. So what we have seen here is people mourning in the graveyard. Voters' remorse for what the Cypriots and Greek Cypriots have done in the negotiations, failing the negotiations for so many decades. We often hear in the public discourse, we wish to have solved the Cyprus problem many decades ago, realizing that this is not going to happen. Many people support federation knowing this is far from the reality. I think this view has some truth to it. I think there is an element of voters remorse. If we ask about the Annan plan today, we have seen more and more increase for support on related arrangements to the Annan plan. But I don't think this is the whole story. I mean, part of the beauty of this analysis, as Hussein has pointed, is that we went into a lot of detail as to what people will support. And one of the key questions was the linkage that he mentioned on security and power sharing, political equality for the Turkish Cypriots versus end of interference by Turkey for the Greek Cypriots. This is a golden, if you wish, linkage on the Cyprus issue. The most important, the take-home message of his presentation. And I think that's the most important one that one should take into consideration. And our survey goes into detail to identify some of these linkage. And the understanding here is that the Greek and Turkish Cypriots are not just supporting a federation as a general principle, supporting peace as a general principle, but they are ready to compromise on something more concrete. In fact, some of the other studies we have done in similar venue use counterfactuals. What about if we had this political system? What about if we had this level of compensation for owners and IDPs? Once we have run some of these packages together, in line with what we have done with the Levendis LSE funded survey, we've seen that even when it comes to details, the two communities could come together. So it's not just mourning in the diplomat's graveyard. There is some truth to it. Majorities on both sides, simultaneous majorities on both sides, are in line of accepting a compromise. The other element that supports this thesis of Greek Cypriot public opinion changing over time is transformation among certain specific segments in the Greek Cypriot society. And the first one is IDPs, internally displaced persons, as Haris mentioned, who are now much more likely to support federation. One of the first surveys I contributed to in 2009 as part of SEED, we asked similar questions and we couldn't find difference between IDPs and non-IDPs. For the past decades, many IDPs realized, particularly in the Greek Cypriot community, that the promises offered to them during their non-plan, even before, have not been materialized. So increasingly, they're becoming more skeptical towards their leaderships. Increasingly, those who are potential returnees are supporting in the public opinion polls by zonal, by communal federation. These are also the most vocal vocal groups in the social media. So there is corroborating evidence supporting that thesis, also linked to the Varosha developments as well. Now the cynical view of that is that this is a declining demographic group. So those who are supporting federation and the IDPs who are supporting federation, those who left their homes in 1974 are declining demographically. But the truth is that we also have the second and the third generation of IDPs. And in fact, those are married to non-IDPs. So increasingly that demographic is increasing. The 2006 survey we ran with Haris as part of a Liberhulme funded project, we added all demographic groups, second generation people married to IDPs, people who have properties. And in fact, they're now majority in the Greek Cypriot community. So they're not just decreasing, they're decreasing from one point of view, but increasing from another point of view. And they're very important overall in terms of their political say as a demographic group. In fact, if you win the IDPs, either those who want to return home or those who want to be properly compensated, then you probably have the second key to the Cyprus question. The first key was what Hussein mentioned, the political equality, security. The second key is the return of the IDPs and properly compensating those who are negatively, so will be negatively affected by the settlement, either Turkish Cypriot users or Greek Cypriot owners, or Turkish Cypriot owners as well, and Greek Cypriot users on the south of the island. The third reason why this transformation is occurring, but is not so much obvious in politics, is that it's occurring in the opposition party. Harry, would you mind putting the second slide? So I only chose one slide, and that's probably the most important. That's a slide I have printed for my office, and I work the time and trying to interpret that. So the political parties are the most important here in the analysis, because that's the ones who are going to switch public opinion according to their endorsements, right? So with demographic groups, we have a starting point in our analysis. With political parties, we're also going to see switches from one group to another, depending what the party will decide in a future referendum. But the trick there is that ideally you would like all political parties to support a settlement, so everybody who's in the green will form the majority in a future referendum. So the three take-home lessons from this curve, from this diagram. The first is that AGEL is becoming the primary bicommunal party. So you can see AGEL on the left with the dark green color has the biggest the strongest pro-federalism core among all Greek Cypriot political parties. AGEL has made this transformation. It's very clear from its internal politics that has a pro-federalism orientation. There's a group within AGEL, and this is expected from all political parties, who are skeptical, but AGEL tends to be the most pro-federal party. The Niazi experience, the Niazi experiment, having Niazi Kızılyurek as their candidate helped immensely in this in this transformation of the party. It's also very important and links to the point that Hussein and Hari make about the contact, bicommunal contact. Akel is also the most bicommunally oriented party when it comes to its contact. In another survey that Harris has run with ESS, he found out that 45% or 44% of Akel supporters have bicommunal contract, contact, in contrast with 50% of these supporters and only 8% of the other parties. So one very important issue here for mediators is asking political parties to what extent their positions are also reflected in actions when it comes to bicommunal events, bicommunal contact is very important. To what extent do they engage their voters in bicommunal contacts, especially with this cities to be, this seems to be a blind spot. DC is often referred as a bipolar party, and rightly so. It has a conservative core and it has a pragmatic core with the supporters. What this survey show is that most of the DC supporters are in the middle. So it's a lot of undecided voters within DC who are supporting federation, but not strongly so. The light green is the predominant tendency within this. So there's a lot of work to be done there to get the light green to the direction of a yes vote in a future referendum. But still, they both, DC and Akel, make the core of the support for the bizonal, bicommunal federation, but with different interpretations and different intensities. And then you have within the so-called rest, which tend to be the hardline parties, even with those, those who are against bizonal bicommunal federation, they don't make the majority. So there's a lot of work and a lot of potential even with smaller parties to engage their voters through concessions, through institutions, through recalibrating the context of the Cyprus problem in order to win their support. There's also the broader question of what happens at the regional level in the Eastern Mediterranean. One will predict that the rising escalation of tensions in the region have switched public opinion, swing public opinion in favor of more hardline positions. The situation seems to be much more complex, as Odette will explain. Often the escalations can mean different things for different people and can move public opinion, and depending on the context, into more conciliatory approaches. Odette.
Great, I will share my screen now. Philip, how much time do I have approximately?
Well, let's say a maximum of 10 minutes so that we have...
Yeah, that'll be fine. Great. Do you see my screen? Okay, so perfect. And hello, everyone. Thanks so much. I want to thank my colleagues for this excellent presentation. My name is Odette Adomi-Leshem. I'm actually speaking from Jerusalem, Israel-Palestine now. And I was fortunate enough to join my colleagues in the survey that we ran together in Cyprus. Usually our surveys are run in a different conflict setting in Israel-Palestine. And for us, what's interesting is to compare trends in conflicts and see whether groups in conflicts behave similarly or differently, depending on the context. Of course, one of the Israeli-Palestinian case and the Cypriot case, there are some similarities. They are both very prolonged conflict with also ethnic and religious origins. But one of the big differences is that the conflict in Israel-Palestine is highly violent. There are deaths, conflict-related deaths in Israel-Palestine on a daily basis. And fortunately enough, the friends in Cyprus, the conflict there is very dormant when it comes to explicit violence. And we want to kind of compare things across conflicts. And today I will talk about the relationship between the threat of escalation and public support for peace. And I'm going to focus on the findings from Cyprus. When I'm talking about escalation, people that live in conflict, when they imagine the future, they could definitely imagine a situation where the conflict is escalating in terms of intercommunal violence, escalating on a more larger regional scale. So when people think about escalation and their threat from escalation, we want to see how that affects their support for peace and other policies. So generally speaking, like I said, people that live in conflict zones live in a constant concern that a conflict will escalate. And this is true both in Israel, Palestine, where the violence is high, but it could also be in places where the violence is low, like in Cyprus. When people imagine the future, they can think, wow, this thing is going to become worse and the violence is going to escalate. Just a minute. But there are actually two ways that this threat from escalation could influence people's support for conflict-related policies, especially dovish policies that wish to promote peace. The first one is that the higher the perceived threat, the higher the support for dovish policies, because people will think, okay, the conflict is going to escalate, we need to move fast in the direction of peace, in the direction of a resolution. Peace is urgent, and we need to do it now. So the higher the perceived threat, the higher the support for dovish policies like compromises and negotiations. But it could be also the case that the higher the perceived threat, the lower the support for dovish policies, because people will be more antagonistic to the other group and also think that peace will be is highly unlikely if the conflict is going to escalate. So there's no need to support it. And indeed, the literature shows mixed results. Some studies show that threat is associated with support for dovish policies and peace promoting steps. And in some other studies, threat perceptions from escalations are associated with lower support. The thing is that most of the time, or most of the literature checked people's, when they checked threat, they were assessing actually, or asking people to assess the likelihood of future violence, the likelihood of escalation. But actually, when people assess threat, they also assess the severity of escalation. So how much the escalation is actually going to harm them. Some people might think that escalation will be dreadful and awful, and some people might think that escalation will be, you know, not good, but also not as problematic. And indeed, work on risk assessment shows that people need take these two factors into account when they try to assess a threat. And this is also true in conflict zones. We saw it in Israel-Palestine. People, Israelis and Palestinians, when they think of conflict escalation, they think of two things: how much the conflict is likely to escalate, and if it escalates, what will be the harm? And of course, the higher the likelihood and the higher the perceived severity, the greater the threat. So the question that we actually ask is, how do these two components of threat relate to policy preference during conflict? And we hypothesized that people that their threat are stemming from the severity of escalation. So they perceive the severity of escalation as high. They are afraid of the consequences, afraid that the consequences are going to be devastating. They will be more eager to hasten peace and therefore more supportive of dovish policies. But at the same time, when the threat is stemming from the perceived likelihood of escalation, people will believe that peace is less possible and therefore will not support dovish policies. Okay, so it will be like opposite trends. Now, when we look at our threat perceptions, okay, and like this is like an image of a whole circle, like I said, they are comprised of these two components: the perceived severity of escalation and the perceived likelihood of escalation. And among some people, the perceived severity will be the more dominant threat perception, and the perceived likelihood, the smaller part. And for other people, the perceived likelihood of escalation will be more dominant than the perceived severity. And what we hypothesized is that this structure of threat, depending on which of the perception is more dominant, will actually predict policy preference. So what we hypothesized that for people that that their perceptions, sorry, I'm trying to move this. Okay. So for example, a person where his perceived or his or her perceived severity is more dominant, they are really worried about the harm that the escalation is going to entail and the devastation and the destruction. More than, and this is more dominant at the perceived likelihood of escalation, for these people, there will be more supportive of dovish policies. And if we look at people where the perceived likelihood is more dominant, so they think that escalation is highly likely, they will be less supportive of dovish policies. And what we did is we took these questions into the field, and together with my Cypriot colleagues, we conducted the study among more than 1,000 Turkish and Greek Cypriots from the north and the south. This is the same sample that Haris and Hussein and Neo talked about before. And we presented all sorts of scenarios, and we asked them, how likely do you think these escalation scenarios will happen? And if they happen, what will be their ramifications? You know, how severe will they be? And we also asked about their willingness to compromise on all sorts of issues and their support for peace building, like support for contact with the other side, etc. And the results are that indeed this structure of threat predicts support for dovish policies. So the more Cypriots threat are actually about the severity of escalation rather than the likelihood, the higher their support for dovish policies. So if I'm worried about how devastating the conflict will be, I'm more supportive of dovish policies compared to people that are, their threat are about how likely the escalation is. And interestingly, this trend replicated in samples. So when we looked separately at Greek Cypriots and looked separately on Turkish Cypriots, we saw the similar trends, okay? So just to sum up, if the perceived severity is higher than the perceived likelihood, the more people will be supportive of dovish policies. And the opposite, if the structure is opposite, perceived likelihood is more dominant, people are less supportive of dovish policies. And just to conclude, so as we see, it actually matters, right? The threat structure actually matters, and we could predict people's support for dovish policies, like compromise, like by zonal, by communal federation, from their threat perceptions. If it's about the severity, so if people are worried about how devastating escalation will be, they will be more supportive of these policies. And actually, that is a perfect replication of our findings from Israel-Palestine. So we replicated the study in Israel-Palestine, and we saw exactly the same thing among Palestinians, among Israelis, Turkish Cypriots, and Greek Cypriots. We could actually, this theory holds among populations marred in very different context of settings. And of course, with future research, we really want to examine it in other political contexts. So that's it from me.
Thank you, Odette. Thank you very much for keeping to the allocated time. And thank you to all of our speakers for their presentations, which give us a great overview of the perceptions, of the wishes and expectations of people from both communities regarding the solution of the Cyprus conflict. So let us now pass to our audience. Let's open the floor to our audience. Some questions have already been posed, but could I just remind our attendees that if you wish to ask a question, please use the Q&A function at the bottom of your screen, and I will filter the questions through to the speakers. So we have about 25 minutes for the questions. So let us start with a question by Martin Barrett, who is Emeritus Professor of Psychology at the University of Surrey. This question is to Haris Psaltis. So the question is, how do we explain the generational differences in the line graphs that you put up in the first part of your presentation? So what is the explanation for the generational differences among these communities? Thanks.
Martin, thank you very much for this very interesting question. I think that we need to go into the field of education and to understand that the way the youth understands the other community, the way they understand the Cyprus issue, and especially into the way history teaching is performed in Cyprus, because in both communities in Cyprus, we have the so-called one-sided narrative of victimization, of collective victimization. So often you will see that even students in universities, Martin, will not be aware of the fact that our own group members at some point in history, you know, misbehaved towards the other group, or were tried to marginalize the other group, or were, you know, made some deeds that were caused harm to the other group. And that we know very well from social psychological research, that creates a sense of threat from the other community. It increases prejudice. It increases distrust for the other community. So in one sense, it creates a symbolical distance between the two communities. If you recall, when I presented the findings, I said that the picture that emerges out of there is a bit complex, in the sense that on the one hand, we see that the youth are more reluctant to support peace building activities, but at the same time, they have less ethos of conflict, which is also expected given the fact that they have not lived through the conflict in 1974 or before that in 63-64. So on the one hand, you have in a way two tension created here. On the one hand, they haven't lived through the conflict, but at the same time, they did not have the chance to live together and have contact with the other community. But you still have a kind of educational system that does not create opportunities to meet the other community and creates this sense of one-sided victimization. So I guess that partly explains the findings. And the other issue, especially in the Greek Cypriot community, that concerns again the educational system, is that the students are very rarely taught about political systems and how countries are run, and that, you know, that we have a lot of federations in the world, and that kind of model that is being discussed by the two leaders since 1977 in Cyprus could actually apply at some point in Cyprus. So the most of the people are ignorant about the other community and are ignorant about the kind of solution that is being discussed on the negotiation table. So we have seen from our findings that it's not about being prejudiced. The levels of prejudice of the younger generation are at equal level in both communities with the older generation. So it's not that they are more prejudiced, that they are, you know, fanatical against the other community. It's that they lack knowledge and they lack this political cultivation of understanding how this will work if we ever find a solution, this bizonal bicommunal federation. So I would say that this maybe gives some sense of an explanation here.
Thank you very much, Haris. We have a second question by the same person, by Martin Barrett, which is addressed to Hussein Çakal. So the question is, what do you think is the underlying mechanism of the finding with Turkish settlers that contact with Turkish Cypriots is related to their attitudes to Greek Cypriots?
Thank you. That's a really good question. Here today, I presented only one study. We conducted several studies with the Turkish settlers. And over and again, we found two mechanisms underlying this process. One is the attitude generalization, which is a positive attitude created by positive contact with one group generalizes to another group, which has some similarities with that group. Here in this respect, We have the Turkish Cypriots and the Greek Cypriots, and the similarity or the overlap is the Cypriotness. We tested additional mechanisms, whether this is, if we can prove this statistically by including Cyprus identification, because we also asked people about, irrespective of their ethnic origin, settlers, whether they identify as Cypriots. In this case, we didn't find it. We also have another line of research, which is just, we are just about to submit. There, we found evidence of emotion generalization. Here, it's the attitude generalization, the positive attitudes is transferred from one group, generalizes from one group to another. In the other paper, we look at the emotions and we say the same thing. We ask, and in that one, we don't have it here. In that one, we also ask about negative contact, because not all social interactions are positive. And sometimes people have negative social interactions with the members of the other group. What we see, not negative contact, but positive contact influences, positively influence positive emotions towards the primary group, in this respect, Turkish Cypriots. And these positive emotions influence, again, positively, emotions towards Greek Cypriots. And these emotions, in turn, positively influence willingness to live, accept Greek Cypriots, and also willingness to support for a peaceful solution to the Cyprus problem. So we have uncovered. Well, the first result that I presented here is not very vulnerable. Here we show it in the Cypriot context and with regards to a disadvantaged group, Turkish settlers, generalizing its positive attitudes towards an advantage group, Greek Cypriots. This part was known. But in the other research in which we looked at the emotion generalization, that's really a novel finding, because in the literature, we don't find any findings relating to generalization, any process other than generalization of attitude. So I think there are several processes at play here. But again, as Harris said, we need more research. Here we conducted only a cross-sectional survey among the settlers. We should be able to follow this process longitudinally, measuring the same people, using the same measures across time, so that we can establish causality. That is exactly the situation that contact influences positively influences attitudes towards Turkish Cypriots, which in turn positively influences attitudes towards Greek Cypriots. We are just starting, I mean, scratching the surface with regard to, we know so much about more or less, relatively, much about the intergroup relations and the effect of contact on Turkish Cypriot and Greek Cypriot attitudes towards each other, but we know very little about how these processes, to what extent these processes apply to the Turkish settlers, who actually have very limited opportunities of contact with the Greek Cypriot. So I think we're just starting. We'll be conducting more studies, and we'll be happy to share the findings with the academic community and the community at large in Cyprus. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Hussein. This is very clear. I see that Neophytos has kindly responded to some questions in writing already in the Q&A box. If anybody would like to add anything to these questions, I would like to pose them to everybody here as well. So Dimitris Moniudis from the Hellenic Engineer Society is asking, is the political party position on the bicommunal, bizonal, bicommunal federation a defining factor when voters select which party to vote for in both communities? Or is it of low priority compared to the economy, social issues, and so on? Would anybody like to add anything to what Neophytos already responded, or Neophytos like to add anything to that? Neophytos, you need to unmute yourself.
If I can add something to that, we don't have the data to know how people vote. Cyprus is one of the few countries in Europe that doesn't do a post-election survey. So it's something that is missing. And normally when one country has, or two countries have, two communities have elections, what happens is that there is a post-election survey that can answer some of these exact questions. So very valuable information for policymakers, because they need to know why people vote, not just when people vote them, but why people vote them. And this instrument is missing from public policy. But because the system is such that people choose both a political party and candidates, what normally happens is that they will vote for a candidate within the political party that reflects their views the most. And often this is an issue mostly with Democratic Rally, because the party has this bipolar identity. And the candidates are competing against each other, hardliners with moderates, and each is trying to bring their own voters. So you end up having this umbrella political party that has multiple candidates of different orientations and different approaches to bizonal, bicommunal federation. I would like also to add a little bit to and make a small addition to Odette's presentation and the question by Jakubos. What does the future? What does the future predict? It's very hard to make predictions, but what we have seen is a very worrying escalation in the region and in Greek-Turkish relations. And this, of course, is of interest to the broader community of experts in the Hellenic Observatory. There is a new book that is coming out very soon by Stefanos Katsikas, and one of the about Islam and the Balkans and Greece. And one of the arguments there is that some of the conflicts in the region in the past 200 years are much more, compared to their neighborhood, are much more violent than anything else. If you compare the Greek Revolution, let's say, to the Serbian Revolution, if you compare the Balkan Wars, Greece and Turkey versus everybody else. What is happening between the two neighbors and even in Cyprus, if one compares how many casualties we had even in few weeks of a war in 1974, that compares at the level almost of Rwanda, it had continued for another year. That's where Cyprus would have been. And going back to the presentation by Odette, people are aware of that. I think there should be a reminder of how devastating a conflict could be. And I think that's the most important point for the peace movement, to remind people that even an accidental war could mean a nightmare scenario for the region, especially given how armed Greece and Turkey are, how concentrated how much army there is in Cyprus. It's one of the most militarized parts of the world. So if you put this into the broader context, it explains also the findings that Odette has described in his analysis, but also why people, once they see escalation, they react the way they react in a more pro-reconciliation way. And I think that's something we should nurture more in the future.
Thank you very much again. We have a set of very interesting questions. So let's see how many we can take in the time that is left. So we have a question by James Carlinzi, who's asking, do Greek Cypriots really understand what a BBF, a bizonal, bicommunal federation settlement means? People say that they want it, but when presented with it, they say that this is not what they understand by BBF. This is a question to all of you, so I leave it to you to decide who will answer.
Maybe Nofides could continue, and then me and Hussein could take this up.
Okay, sure. I would just like to ask you to keep this as brief as possible, please.
Very quickly, in 1 minute, I think both the findings that Hussein has explained in terms of the linkage between security and political equality, but also some more detailed counterfactuals we have tested in one of our other experiments and studies, the one you mentioned, the USIP, at the beginning of the talk, Philip, show that even when you give some more detail, people will converge on package. The question there is whether some of these findings in public opinion could also inform a modified version of the Guterres package, if you wish, an improved version of the Guterres package, a Guterres 2, that is more, if you wish, in tune to the sensitivities of the people and a little bit more specific as to the obligations and rights of the two communities.
Yeah, thank you very much, James. I mean, given my previous comment, your question makes perfect sense in the sense that when a lot of the youth do not have a clear sense of federation, then one might wonder, okay, when, in what terms do they position themselves if they do not have a lot of information about it? But what we actually did, as Neophytos mentioned, was to bypass this problem, not only in this research, but also in another research following the conjoint method, where we tried, we went into, you know, a lot, we did a lot of effort and invested a lot of effort in trying to explain in very clear terms what we mean by that. And today we have seen that we defined political equality with exchange on issues of security, for example. Or in the conjoint, we created a package that had a number of compensations about the loss of property, about how federation, the executive in the federation will be managed, or the Supreme Court. And we went into a lot of detail in explaining to people. And the overall conclusion in that is that the findings still hold. I mean, if you go and define in very specific terms what you mean with federation, then the findings still hold.
Thank you, Haris. Do you want to add anything to
say? No, just wanted to say that I think there is the whole issue of the difference between reality and perceptions. So as some of our findings show today, the perceptions are influenced by a host of factors, and they will show one of those positive factors, which is contact. But then an informed decision will always require the a more detailed factual information about the target of that perception. And as Haris nicely said, when we open it up and when we even, you know, present it in a more factual format, the support holds up. So that's my only addition to this.
Great, thank you very much. We have time to take a very brief question, a last question now. Let me ask another question posed by James Kerlinsey, who's asking, people may say that they want peace, but this doesn't seem to translate into pressure on, let alone action by political leaders and parties. Why is this the case?
Novita, you want to go first?
Sorry, I was replying to Theodoru's question. So can you repeat it? Sorry.
Okay, let me answer first then. And so the question here was by James was, if that's the situation at the grassroots level, why don't we see political action in that direction? And I guess that's a very good question, but it has to do with the different priorities of political leadership in terms of the priorities of people down in the street, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we have seen recently all this discussion about the scandals with the passports, corruption and everything, and you know, all these developments, rightly, I think, make people wonder whether the priorities of some politicians are really in resolving the problem or, you know, just making money, to put it bluntly, you know. So I don't know whether other people have anything to say, but I think it's very clear that, you know, we have a difference of priorities there.
Yeah, if I can add to that, the Greek Cypriot public opinion, those who support federation, they do so, but not in the highest intensity as in the Turkish Cypriot community. And they tend to be more people who are willing to live with bizonal bicommunal federation, but they wouldn't necessarily go to the streets to advocate it. They would vote for it in a referendum, and they would support it if it comes into becoming an option. But I think with the Greek Cypriot side, what would drive support will be the politics, endorsements by political parties, and also creating an institutional structure that political parties will feel comfortable to support the settlement. And also, if there are reasonable compensations for owners and IDPs, that will also drive the peace settlement. What Hussein has said is very indicative. Sometimes we find support among settlers that we wouldn't expect. We find support among IDPs that we wouldn't expect. So these are the groups who have most to lose from the settlement, but at the same, most to win if there is the right institutional structure and the right and credible set of compensations. In the case of settlers, there will be citizenships, become European citizens, probably less land, but more valuable in their case, more security. So, and the same with the Greek Cypriots. Those who have lost their properties will get either compensation or get their properties back. Some of them under Greek Cypriot administration, most of them under the Greek Cypriot administration, fewer under Turkish Cypriot administration. So there's a lot of potential there for win-win gains. And those demographic groups can drive the peace settlement, but it wouldn't happen in the Greek Cypriot in the form of activism, or at least we haven't seen it yet. It will be more through a political process, consultation, and deliberations within political parties.
Thank you very much for your responses. I'm afraid that we are out of time now, so let me apologize to the one person whose question I was not able to pose here live, but thankfully, Neophytos answered the question in the Q&A function. So let me thank you, each of our speakers, very much for the breadth and clarity of their presentations today. I think that they gave us a very good overview of where the communities are today with regards to the conflict, hope, and perceptions of a solution in the Cyprus conflict. Let me remind you that this discussion will be available as a recorded video from the LSE Hellenic Observatory website and the HO YouTube channel in the next days. And finally, let me also inform you about our next event, which is titled The Brexit Deterrent: How Britain's Exit Has Shaped Public Support for the EU. This event will take place online on Thursday, 21st October at 4 p.m. UK time. And you can find further information on this and other future events of the Hellenic Observatory listed on our website. So thank you again to all of our speakers today, and thank you for watching, and see you soon again at the HO.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Philip.
Thank you, Philip.
Thank you so much. Goodbye.